This is Rewired Radio with Erica Spiegelman, addiction and wellness specialist, motivational speaker, and author, helping individuals, couples, and families regain a sense of control, leading to personal growth, wellness, and a more fulfilling life. Here's Erica Spiegelman.
Welcome, everyone. This season is marked by party after party, where we gather with family and friends and enjoy a hearty meal and holiday treats. But how could we tell if someone around the table is battling an eating disorder or someone even in our family? My guest today, Robin Goldberg, is a national renowned nutrition therapist and certified eating disorder registered dietitian who helps her clients understand their relationship to food and the benefits of proper nutrition. Robin is here today to talk to us about how we can recognize the signs of an eating disorder in ourselves and our loved ones, and what we can do to nurture a healthy relationship with food, fitness, and our bodies. Robin, welcome to the show. So grateful to have you with me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you have such a wealth of knowledge around something which is, you know, something we all deal with literally every single day. You know, it's funny when I'm thinking about, you know, what I do counseling for people with addictions, it's eating is something that we have to do to survive. So it's probably one of the hardest addictions and probably one of the hardest ailments to deal with, would you say?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's no way to avoid food. I mean, food, mm-hmm. you know, we need to eat food to survive, and especially this time of the year, there's an abundance. I mean, whether you're getting, you know, your car at the Valley Parker, you're at the dry cleaners, you're standing at a corner, I mean, food is everywhere, and I think it can be a very overwhelming and intimidating experience now, because it's not just in day-to-day life, it's everywhere you go, it's just like the intensity of it, which I think can be very scary for many, many people.
Yeah, and I know that there's a lot of people out there that question whether they have their own issues with eating, or if their kind of eating habits aren't as healthy as they're supposed to be. How do you begin to work with clients and kind of scale that and have them understand their relationship to food?
Well, you know, I work in my practice with what's called the non-diet approach, which is also known as intuitive eating. And, you know, being in Los Angeles, I think there is this, I want to say, radar of this obsession to be healthy to an extent which many people would say it's wonderful to be healthy, but they take it to the umpth degree.
Yes.
And people will want to be natural, organic, vegan, raw, gluten-free, but they take the pleasure away from food, where they are not able to go out to any restaurant if it does not fall into their specific criteria. So what I do with clients, especially when a loved one or a friend or a colleague even reaches out and they see it's affecting their overall well-being, is, and these are some of the things I'd like to be able to share with you, Erica, and your listeners.
Yeah.
Because I think, really, what I have even found, it's ironic that we're discussing this today, is, I mean, I've had literally in the last week, people have had interventions to be able to say, you know what, this is really what's happening, because they're just saying, like, wow, we're having, you know, holiday parties at our office, and our colleagues can't even just, you know, attend. Is being able to see, like, you know what, they're obsessed with, for example, like calories or carbohydrates and proteins and fats, and we'll say, like, what's wrong with that? Well, you know what, you know, we're having, for example, Chinese food at our office. And my overall philosophy is that eating can and should be a pleasurable experience.
Right.
You know, like when we go out to eat, going out to restaurants is very different than what we would do at home. It's nice to be served. It's nice to be catered to. And when you think about a baby or a small child, we were not programmed thinking about, well, how many grams of carbohydrate are in this, or how much fat, or how much protein, or what will this make me fat? We ate when we were hungry and stopped when we were satisfied. So what I like to do with somebody who comes to me is I will ask many, many questions regarding their relationship with food. And it's even before I meet with them. I mean, I can even assess this on the phone within a few moments, mm-hmm. just how they are feeling. And it's oftentimes that they won't eat anything if it doesn't have a label on it. That's a big one, mm-hmm. if they're afraid right. to eat a food that doesn't have a label on it, or if the individual will weigh herself or himself daily, as we really, it's important to learn how to listen to our body internally, as all of our bodies shift daily, mm-hmm. and it mm-hmm. can be problematic, too, when an individual won't go on a trip. If God forbid they don't have their scale with them, that, right. that can be troubling, too. And mm-hmm. or if mm-hmm. the individual wouldn't go out socially. This is a big one, too, this time of the year. If we wouldn't go out because we don't like the way that we look, it's common. I mean, how often do we find ourselves having multiple wardrobe changes? We're in our closet. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think this could happen to all of us, but where you're inviting a friend out and they are canceling you time and time again, but you find yourself staying home and they're canceling over and over, or they're wearing loose clothing to hide their body. And it's not like, oh, it's a fashion statement, but, and this is amongst males too.
Yeah.
Of wearing clothes to hide right. their body.
You Robin, know, let me ask you something sure. really quick about, so, you know, this is all great signs and things people could be aware of. And you know, I mean, I think these are red flags, but, you know, the emotional piece too is probably pretty relevant. I know that some of the clients that I have there are super depressed and kind of disengaged and isolating a little bit. I know that people with eating disorders and eating issues kind of are in their head a lot. It's an yeah. kind of an OCD and an obsession. So some of those, could we just talk about some of those emotional signs? You know, maybe somebody that is isolating or has, you know, their mood has changed recently, or, you know, there's I feel like there's so much emotionally going on, and so much suffering going on with people that can't, you know, they can't really seem to be around food or have a healthy relationship with it.
Well, sometimes their emotion changes because they're nutritionally compromised. So if you're starving your brain, then mm-hmm. the depression will increase. And right. and when you think about this, like, let's use carbohydrates as an example. Your brain can't store carbohydrates. So using, you know, a carbohydrate, whether it's bread, rice, cereal, pasta, you know, I use bread because many people are afraid of bread. And they'll say, well, I will eat fruit, but I won't eat bread. So when their overall...
Is that a silly thing to say? Or, I mean, should people be afraid of bread? I mean, how come this message has gotten kind of, has been running rampant in our society?
Due to fad diets. You know, there's so many fad diets out there, as you know, Erica. And
yeah.
there's, you know, the various high-protein diets that have been out there. And, you know, now there's, you know, we've transitioned. We go through these different phases of, I call it, you know, the you know, trend du jour of what diet is out. I remember, you know, as a kid, it was, you know, of course, you know, Pritikin, which, you know, again, I started my career as a cardiac dietitian at Cedars Sinai Medical Center, so I like mm-hmm. seeing people with medical issues, but I think, as I would like to say, your health is your wealth, and the vanity is mm-hmm. the added bonus, right? So mm-hmm. having that backbone when, you know, oftentimes with folks, if they don't have some sort of trauma which led to them to have disordered thinking or eating, they may have started this as an innocent place, or even a family member or someone in the medical community that recommended they avoid a specific food or food group, that being on a specific diet, whether it be something in the, you know, high protein arena, and now it seems like, okay, it's in this paleo phase. I mean, there's all this data that backs. I mean, we need to have some carbohydrates, some protein, and some fat. We can't fool Mother Nature. So if right. we're excluding a specific food or food group, it's going to rebound and come back and then some. That if we are excluding a specific food or food group, that craving will be greater and bigger, and it ultimately will set us up to binge if we are eliminating that food or food group.
Right, exactly. And I know that you work with people that have bulimia, anorexia, and some, you know, serious eating disorders that can have could have a really dangerous effect on our health.
And binge eating disorder. I mean, that's an eating disorder too. It's the number one eating disorder that actually exists out of all of them.
Is the binge eating?
Uh-huh. Yeah, BED. Yes.
Yeah. And so, let's say, we both work with clients that have all different kinds of issues, and this is what we do, is we're here to help them and heal them. And why is that binge eating why is that, like, the, you know, one of the most kind of, I want to say popular, but why is that the most common?
Well, 60% of women actually have it, who have eating disorders, and 40% of men. And I think people don't realize that it is the most common, because people perceive that one has to, quote-unquote, look sick enough to have an eating disorder. But, mm-hmm. you know, eating disorders, you know, come in all shapes and sizes. So, you know, anyone can have an eating disorder. It doesn't discriminate amongst gender, shape, size. And, you know, I see all shapes and sizes, all genders, and it's, I think oftentimes it falls through the cracks, especially amongst the medical community, too, and it's often misunderstood. And I think it really takes a special type of clinician to understand, and I hear this so often from clients who come to see me, that, you know, I actually, you know, had just presented at a National Eating Disorder Conference on BED, and, you know, so many people will say it's amazing how often my physician will say, like, you're fine, and they have so many other medical issues secondarily as an effect, because I think, as you've even highlighted, Erica, with, like, anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa, those eating disorders have been, you know, highlighted in the eating disorder community for years, like when we've seen, like, how, you know, it made the scene, like, mm-hmm. with Karen Carpenter and others over the years, and, like, BED was, it's like, people think you must be of larger size, and that's not the case at all.
Yeah, I'm happy you said that. And so, for everyone that doesn't know, BED is binge eating disorder, because sometimes our listeners are not aware of all this language. But I'm happy you said that, because I really believe it's true that just because you don't look like you have a disorder or an issue with eating, you could be suffering from something. And so I just want, you know, I want to answer these questions that I know some of our listeners may have today. It's like, what, you know, what constitutes having a disorder, a binge disorder, for instance? Like, is it that we have negative consequences coming up in our lives that we can't shake the thought about eating? Is it something, an obsession of a thought? Like, what are some signs we could look for within ourselves? Because, you know, you're right. There's plenty of people out there that have strange relationships to food, and what constitutes a disorder?
So what constitutes a disorder of binge eating disorder, or just any kind of eating disorder? Sorry, I missed that question.
Well, any kind. I mean, binge we could start with, but you know, I know that there's, like, we may call it binging, like at Thanksgiving, I said, for instance, I don't eat a lot of sweets, but, you know, that night I did because we had tons of cakes and we had, you know, whatever, it was a holiday. So for people out there that may have had, you know, moments where they feel like they binged one night or overate or something like that, I would just want people to understand the difference between binging one night. I mean, not, you know, I think everybody has experienced that. And then what makes it to a point where it could be a problem?
Okay, so I'd like to explain the difference between overeating and binging, because I think you gave a classic example, Erica, when one will use a holiday such as Thanksgiving. So overeating and using a holiday, I was listening to a client the other day. He says, well, you know what, Robin?
Or Sunday night.
I'm sorry, say it again?
I said, or Sunday night. You know, some people, like, once a week will have a night where they, you know, eat more than they're used to.
Sure.
Or, you know, that's what I meant.
Okay, so on Thanksgiving, I think it's very common that people will say, oh, on a holiday, like, everybody binges. Well, I think many people perceive that on a national holiday that they will binge. Maybe reframing it to say they will overeat, because it's accepted. Like, we all overeat on a holiday. So maybe they are not as in touch with their fullness cue, and there's an abundance of food choices that they don't get to have as often, like Aunt Gussie's sweet potato pie and the pecan pie and the mashed potatoes and the dressing and all these delicious, you know, items that are there once a year. And I always like to, you know, rephrase to clients like, you know, you can go to any grocery store and from Thanksgiving until the end of the year, all of those delicious side dishes and pies are there. This is not your only opportunity to have it. And we'll say, you know what, Robin, that's a great point. I did not think of that. However, my grandmother's famous, you know, mashed potatoes and pumpkin pie, all these things, this is like the only time. So I better get my fulfillment of it. And then we discuss kind of segueing to, since I work with intuitive eating, I, you know, speak about something that's called the satisfaction factor. Really, when we are hungry, being able to really enjoy it and feel satiated and satisfied, because when we're hungry, that's when something can actually taste the best. So that's something I teach them. Emotional eating, which when you were discussing binge eating, binge eating, actually, Erica, is oftentimes linked to an emotional status. So if you're sad or anxious or overwhelmed, it's being able to suppress a feeling to avoid it, to just stuff it down. So unless you're going to Thanksgiving or Sunday night, just feeling disappointed and unhappy and not wanting to deal and sit with a feeling, then I wouldn't classify like, oh, Thanksgiving dinner is, I'm going to binge. It might be, you know what? I'm not going to be conscious and present. I'm going to eat till I hit a food coma. It might be, you know what? I'm sitting with family members that really stress me out. I'm just going to eat. I think that's kind of different. So really I would view like I'm going to the family dinner and I'm going to eat until my heart's content. Or you might say, you know what? I was eating. I was having just a really fun time and I just wasn't paying attention and I overate. It wasn't like I deliberately binged.
Right.
Do you understand the difference of that?
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
The binge, I would say a binge is you're eating a concentrated period of food in a short period of time. And I think oftentimes people classify that as, and this is like the cliche example, as, and it doesn't have to be it, but I'm giving like what people oftentimes envision of you're going to the fast food restaurant or the grocery store and you're just, you know, having, I mean, it doesn't have to be this, but this is what people oftentimes, what comes to mind for them of you're having, you know, several items and you're eating it very fast in a short period of time. I mean, it could be leftovers that are in your house. It could be, you know, you just went to the delicatessen and you're eating your potato salad and your pastrami sandwich and the fruit salad and the pickles. But again, it's not wanting to sit and deal and you're wanting to put yourself in a different, you know, emotional state. And like this client said to me the other day, who actually has a history of addiction, he's like, you know what, Robin, I realized this just put me in that place that was like when I would get high and I just didn't want to deal and this was the only thing I knew how to make me feel better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So it becomes a distraction for a lot of people too, I'm hearing you say.
Especially when you don't know how to sit and process and sit with uncomfortable feelings.
Yeah. So as you were talking, a lot of the things you said, I kept the word mindfulness kept coming up because even like, as you said, you're teaching people how to recognize that when they're satiated, that does take a bit of mindfulness. You know, I think
a lot of us
just go, you know, like you have lunch and quickly we have, you know, 15 minutes or half an hour and we eat and kind of forget, like, what did I even eat today? What did I even do? You know, I think there's so many people out there because of our lives and the busyness of our lives that we don't really sit and appreciate or become, you know, or become aware of what am I really doing right now? And am I eating fast? Am I eating slow? What am I eating? And I think just slowing down and being mindful probably is a big part of getting healthy with food.
Yes, and maybe even recognizing, Erica, if they are enjoying what they're eating and if it's what they want to eat, because oftentimes our food choices or the places that we dine at are just selected based on habit and routine, and it's scary to diversify that habit and routine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, this is why, I mean, there's so much to talk about with this. And I think that just understanding, what you're doing and slowing down a little bit and getting into kind of maybe even reading books on mindfulness. I think that would be helpful too. Robin, thank you for being with me today. I'm so happy to have you on. And can you tell everyone where they could find you, your website?
My website is www.askaboutfood.com.
Thank you so much. You're listening to Rewired Radio on Radio MD. I'm Erica Spiegelman. Thank you all for joining us, and stay well.